The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, back after a month away with my kids in Australia. Cheers to Stuart Smith for holding the fort with his excellent episodes of Extra Time while I was away. And to get us caught up with all things J1 over the past four match days, I'm joined by Scott McIntyre, while we'll also check in with Stuart Woodward on Yokohama's patchy month and Neil Debnam on Kawasaki's struggles. The J-Talk Podcast starts now. So, Scott McIntyre, plenty to catch up on. How are you?
I'm getting by with the travails of life, Benjamin, but it's very good to hear that you had a great time back down in Australia. Did you get up to anything off script or anything that you want to fill the listeners in? Did you rollick around in a winery or gallop down the coast in a nude romp or nothing outrageous?
No, nothing like that, unfortunately, Scott. But yeah, chasing two kids around northeast Victoria for 4 weeks certainly took it out of me. I think I need a holiday after my holiday now, but that's usually the way, isn't it, when you travel with kids? But yeah, it was a very nice break and nice to be back at home, see some old friends and some relatives, and yeah, it was a very pleasant time. Basically, my exposure to J1 over that month was catching goal highlights on Twitter off the J-League Twitter feed. But yeah, I wasn't able to catch any games live, but obviously kept up with the results and yeah, tried to watch as many of those goal videos as I could. But yeah, so
you didn't get the old VPN operating? I think it's become harder to use now. I think the zone is kind of cracking down on it. But
I definitely tried, but yeah, I'm not, as regular listeners know, I'm not the most tech savvy, so I do have one on my phone. I tried to use it, but it didn't work, so I gave up rather quickly. I'm not very good with those sort of things, so that was what it was. And usually not able to watch that much live J1 when I'm in Japan anyway, so it was not that much different back home. But while I was away, there were three full match days played, and the four ACL clubs obviously made up their game in hand at the end of July. There wasn't really that much movement in the table, though, was there, Scott? I mean, we're going to come on to what happened on Friday and Saturday, the most recent round. But, yeah, between match days 21 and 23, Kashima moved up from fourth to second. Hiroshima zipped from eighth back up to fourth on the back of three wins and a draw. And then in the relegation dogfight, Tosu climbed off the foot of the table to 16th, while in the other direction, Yokohama and Oita both dropped three spots. F. Marinos falling to 5th and Oita to 8th. Now, as I said, we're coming on to all of the games from match day 24, and we're absolutely not going to talk about all of the games that played during my absence. But Mr. McIntyre, what were some of the major storylines that I missed in the past month then that kept you intrigued during that time?
Well, I think the only team that actually produced three straight results was Gamba, if I'm correct, with three straight draws. But I think they've drawn, what is it, five or six in a row now. They seem to have been drawing every game since probably your last holiday. You have to think the pressure is on at a club like Gamba who now find themselves, on one hand you say, okay, we're drawing all these games as a positive, but they're sinking further and further down the standings. And they're indeed, I think, only 4 points now outside of the relegation spots, which we're going to come into the transfers in a minute. But if you look at the business that they did, they're probably one of the bigger winners of the window, getting the kind of returning legionnaires back up front and in midfield in Usami and Iriguchi. So you would have thought that maybe that could have sparked them a little bit, but they're stumbling down the table. We've seen this, I think it was close to a record drubbing that was handed out at Shimizu a couple of weeks ago. We've seen Mr. Cho at Shonan put on some kind of gardening leave, all sorts of allegations and nefarious business swirling around there. So there has been certainly storylines and of course coaching changes as well. Jubilo are now remarkably, and it must be close to a record. It's their fourth coach of the year if you include the caretakes at Jubilo. And what a story that is, because they, as we've referenced many times on the podcast, refused to invest in the squad. We don't know whether that was a decision that came from Nanami or whether it came from the club, but they've gone haywire in trying to undo it. And you know, they're just throwing money left, right, and centre at all these various coaching changes. This, Gilberto, I don't know how to pronounce it, that probably looks like he's going to be a bit of an interesting addition to the J-League coaching ranks. I still think they might have enough about them to actually get out of it, but we'll get on to Jubilo at some point. And then, yeah, like you said, not much really going on at the top of the table. It seems that, you know, sometimes you have Tokyo winning a game and then dropping a game, but those results have tended to be mirrored by the you know, immediate chasing pack as well. So they've still got a bit of a buffer, 4 points at the top of the standings. But it's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks and indeed a month coming up as well because of, again, another thing we've referenced frequently, the Rugby World Cup and the impact that is going to have on a lot of those teams at the top, of course, Tokyo and Yokohama prime amongst that. And then you've got the other chasing contenders who are having to deal, or not Red so much, but certainly Cashman have to deal with the ACL. You've got, the quarters, two-legged for some bizarre reason, of the Levain Cup coming up. The Empress Cup is still rolling. We've only lost four J1 clubs out of that at the moment. So it's going to be a really busy time, a busy close to the season for a lot of these clubs. So yeah, do you want to get into it in specifics, or you want to get into it game by game? Lead us in a direction, Mr. Maxwell.
No worries. Well, yeah, you have mentioned the Rugby World Cup and its impact on NFC Tokyo. So they have just begun their 8-game away stretch, Scott, with the trip up to Sapporo on Saturday. That was the early game, and well, as you say, yeah, during this break, they've often had a lot of help from teams down the table because we were expecting a Kawasaki to kick on. Yokohama were 3 points behind when I departed the country. Then they proceeded to lose three on the spin while I was away. So perhaps I should have stayed away for a bit longer after their crushing win over Nagoya on Saturday. But yeah, so we've talked about it. As you say, we've referenced it many times. We've had the first of these 8 games take place at the Sapporo Dome on Saturday afternoon, and it was a missed opportunity, you'd have to say, for Tokyo, Scott, especially after Kashima, who, as I said, had moved up to second spot in the table, had been held by Gamba Osaka, and that's, as you say, Gamba's fifth straight draw, it looked like they had done Tokyo a huge favour, but after the Gasmen took the lead through Tsuyoshi Watanabe's header 7 minutes before the break, they were undone by a move straight off the training ground, according to Jay Bothroyd.
Yeah. I don't think so. But that was certainly the way that he liked to spin it. Yeah, I guess you would have to say really a slice of good fortune about that goal. I mean, also, some of those other post comments were quite unusual as well. The interviewer has spoken to our friend, the Tokyo coach, after the game, and said, you know, something about a possession. You know, you had a good deal of possession in this game, and he looked at him. He's like, "What are you talking about? Like, we never have possession in the, you know." He didn't say it, but it was like he knows that this is the great thing about this run of Tokyo games. But it was the strange thing in this game because they did have actually the better share of possession in this game. But almost throughout the entire season, as I've said on numerous occasions, they don't, and they still play far too reactively. For me, yet again, the goal has come from a set piece, and outside of that, I just don't see a consistent scoring threat. You know, again, we want to turn this into the FC Tokyo podcast yet again, but the way they play is tactically very simplistic, incredibly efficient, to their credit, in terms of converting chances. But I just can't believe that it had been as successful as it had been for as long as it had been. And I think now that, you know, you're dealing with, all these run of away games, I just can't see Tokyo having the quality to stay up. I remember last time we spoke before you left, we were wondering what kind of business was going to be done in the transfer market, which was really not a great deal. I mean, Mita came as the returning saviour, but hasn't been able to work his way into the starting side ahead of Omori. We saw something going on with Olga where he was out of favour, and then he came back in the Empress Cup, and I think the story that they're spinning is that he injured himself in that game, and he's apparently out injured now, but I don't know if there's more to that story or not. But the squad hasn't really been strengthened in any way. The whole thing with this JL, if he's coming or going, and then he also seems to be not in particularly a peak physical condition either. He hasn't offered the kind of threat you know that we would have hoped. Certainly came with a fair reputation at the start of the season, so that hasn't materialized either. I mean, in a way, they've been fortunate with their injuries because, well, again, we said at the start of the season, this is going to be a thing that could really kill the squad, that there wasn't too much depth behind the established starters. But, yeah, so, okay, they have a 4-point lead at the moment. But like you said, now 7 away games coming in a row. And of course, you've got all, they don't have the Empress Cup, do they? Because they're out of that, but they've got the other thing to deal with. So, yeah, it's, I mean, let's hope in one way that they can hang on and do it. But also, you know, my personal feeling on it, that I don't appreciate the way that they're playing. I don't think it's a way to build a sustained culture, and certainly not the image that we want of a big club in the glitzy city. And but that's what we're left with. And yeah, I just can't see it. I can't see it working. I don't know which of the teams below them. It might be the one to come and get them, and it might be it might be an amazing finish. Actually, you might get down to the final day, and you could conceivably have, I don't know, 3 or 4 teams right in contention for it. So, you know, from that point, it would be a marketing dream for the J League. But yeah, this result, okay, it's a decent point on the road, but the Sapporo team is obviously rounding into a bit of form themselves. So, I mean, okay, you take the point, but it's certainly going to get a lot harder from here.
Yeah, I mean, especially after they'd seen Kashima's result on the Friday night, it would have meant so much to hang on and grab those 3 points and take their lead back up to 6. But I mean, yeah, for as you say, we don't want to turn this into an FC Tokyo podcast, but I mean, the both of us just don't feel that this is sustainable, even though it is 24 games into the year. There are 10 games left. I mean, any Tokyo supporters are getting too carried away, and I don't think there's too many of us, because as we've said numerous times, we've never been in this situation before. I mean, after 24 games of last season, Hiroshima was still 6 points clear of Kawasaki, who did have a game in hand, which was postponed due to a typhoon. But I mean, you know, they were still miles behind, and then they won the league by 12 points, didn't they, Kawasaki? So there's so much water to go under. There's so many bridges, as we both know, as we all know listening to this podcast. I'm trying to enjoy it, Scott. I'm trying to enjoy it. But then, as you say, it's not the easiest football on the eye. And as you say, they had a huge opportunity to make a splash in the transfer market, and I love Hirotaka Mita, but yeah, he's not going to be a difference maker, and he's not going to be the difference between Tokyo hanging on at the top or not. So it's hard to imagine us ever being in this position again. It seems like if we do win it, we're going to do a Leicester and we're going to slip back down the table. So we need to make sure that we get it done when we have this golden opportunity. And yeah, there wasn't enough done in the transfer window to appease my fears.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know, I've always thought that Mita's best position is in a central, a number eight kind of role, where he can be on the ball and really dictating the tempo of play. But they seem intent in seeking him out in this right wing role as well. That's the other thing about the system almost never changes. It's the same players everywhere. You go, okay, you can see you're on a winning run, but there's no flexibility within the system, and you know, I just think they're going to get caught out anyway. We could have Japan's next striker in the ranks. So you see these stories. Apparently, Diego Oliveira has turned down a return home to Brazil to stay in Japan and try and get citizenship and turn out for the national team. So goodness knows what the world's going to make of that penalty routine when it's unleashed upon them in 3 or 4 years' time.
Good Lord, he might have been on the phone to his old mate to Elkerson over in China to follow in his footsteps. So that's a very interesting development if it does come to pass. But so as it is, the Tokyo, as we said, maintain their 4-point lead at the top over Kashima. A brief word on Sapporo then, Scott. They, of course, were coming off an 8-0 annihilation of Shimizu. So that had a few Tokyo supporters a bit wary about heading up to the Dome for this away clash. But while the second half was fairly feisty and there was a fair bit happening a few spot fires for the referee to have to put out, at the end of the day, Tokyo take the point, even though they're disappointed to have lost the lead. But, yeah, it was an interesting game, and I think Jay Bothroyd mentioned it again in his post-match interview, a very English-style game.
Yeah, which was translated as a Premier League style game. I'm not sure it's quite the case anymore. It might have been 40 years ago in the Premier League. But I mean, Sapporo have been good, and I think you heard Petrovic the week before reference that. You know, they've won 8-0, but he made the point that, you know, we've been creating this many chances, and even the games where the results haven't been coming. But today, you know, everything, or in that game, everything that they touched seemed to end up in a goal. And I generally tend to agree with him. You know, even though the results haven't necessarily been there, they've been positive in games. They have been creating a lot of chances. Our little Chanatip is in absolutely superb form, and as is Jay. I mean, you know, we know when he's fit, he's one of the best strikers, in my opinion, is one of the top two or three strikers in the league. You know, a fantastic scoring rate and a fantastic a finisher from a variety of angles and positions. And, you know, you couple that with the threat from set pieces of Fukumori, who did his little juggling trick before he took one at the weekend, which was quite a nice little bit of entertainment for the crowd. So they're a balanced squad. They don't have too many injury concerns as well. And if you were to pick one of the teams that could go on a run from deep, I know the gap is quite extensive at 13 points with 10 matches remaining, but they have the quality, I think, to do it. They have a very solid defence, a very good goalkeeper as well. I mean, yeah, and they're an in-form team, even though, you know, there have been a couple of draws, you know, in the last four to six games. But I can't see anyone, yeah, certainly below them making a run. You know, the form, the order are going backwards, and Nagoya all over the shop, and then the teams below them, you can put a line through them. So I think it ends at Sapporo, who are in seventh on those 36 points, 13 points, as I said, behind FC Tokyo. And if there was to be a smoky, a long shot for the title, I don't think they have the consistency to do it, but they certainly have the balanced squad, the coach who knows what he's doing. I know he hasn't quite hit the high notes before, but yeah, they could be certainly a team to watch, I think, over the run home.
Yes, indeed. A good chance perhaps to match last season's fourth place finish, which was, of course, their highest ever in J1. They'll be doing well to nudge their way into the top four. But as you say, Scott, yeah, they do have a lot of potential in that squad. They showed it last year, of course. And yes, wouldn't rule them out of a late season push up the table once again. All right, so yes, on Friday night then, Kashima wasted a chance to put some more pressure on FC Tokyo by being held, as I said earlier, to a 2-2 draw at home against Gamba Osaka. The visitors took a 33rd-minute lead through Adam Milson, who out-muscled Bueno before firing through Kwonsunte, who might have done better on the shot. But Serginho equalised a minute before half-time with an absolute rocket after being set up by the dynamic Shoma Doi. Always great to see him in full flow. Then 13 minutes rather after the break, it was showtime as he put Kashima into the lead at 2-1. But yes, unfortunately for Kashima, they conceded a penalty with just under 20 minutes to go, and Patrick fired home from the spot, and that was it. No late push. Well, there was a late push, but there was no late drama and no late goals for Antlers, and yes, they had to settle for a point. Scott, you know, we know about Antlers' pedigree. We know Tokyo have never been in this situation before, so whether they say so or not, I'm sure they're looking anxiously in their rearview mirror. I guess this is a game in the past seasons. Antlers are trying to hunt down a piece of prey above them in the table. You would have expected them to win this with ruthless efficiency, but I don't know. Maybe they're not quite the same Antlers of old. Gamba did well, as I say, to fight back and earn a share of the spoils here. But Antlers definitely, well, they're still within striking distance. It makes, it's a ridiculous thing to say. Of course, they are with 10 games to go, but they still show so much. But on this occasion, it was not to be their night.
That's right. I don't agree that they're not the Antlers of old. I think they've done an amazing job to get to this point where they are. And again, I've referenced this many times in previous chats with you, because you have to look at the bulk of this squad. And by that, I don't just mean the players. I mean the staff as well. You know, the doctors, the physios, the kit guys, the analysts, all the technical staff, as well as the players, have been operating because of the back-to-back appearances in the Club World Cup and the run, of course, to winning the ACL last year, with essentially without a break for 2.5 years. I mean, I think they had something like crazy, like a Japanese salaryman holiday of like 6 days off or something at the end of this season, and they were straight back into it. You factor in, you know, some of these guys have been involved in national team camps at the various levels around that as well. So it's truly astonishing, I think, what Kashima have been able to achieve, given the fact that imagine doing any job, Ben, when you haven't had a holiday in years and finding the motivation to turn up and a physical thing, obviously, like this as well. And it's cost them because players are breaking down and there's injuries. And now they're still, remarkably, they're still alive in all four competitions. And I had a little bit of a thing pop into my head a couple of weeks ago. I messaged our good friend Sean Carroll. And I said, this is the year, I think, that you could see a Japanese team win four trophies. I think they're absolutely alive in the Asian Champions League. Of course, the first leg of that takes place this week with Urawa and Kashima. The return ties are coming and next month. And, you know, obviously still in the quarters of the Levain because of the buy into that. And they're safely through to the whatever it is, the round of 16 in the... Not the round of 16, the...
No, you're right, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it is the round of 16 in the Empress Cup as well. So they're alive there. And what they've had to do is continue... I mean, they've had all these injuries, but then they've had to continue to juggle the squad. So you just look at this match alone, okay? Leo Silva, they left on the bench as an unused substitute, no doubt, because they've got a trip to China coming up as well. And then both of your regular central defenders in Jung and Inukai were out, as well as Leandro's out as well. So it's a large part of your team that's missing. Certainly the two central defenders are very crucial, and I think you were kind in saying that Bueno was muscled off the ball. I think he fell over. He got all tangled up in himself. So he's perhaps not lived up to the potential we thought he might have had a couple of years ago. But then you look on the other side of it, somehow I don't know how in God's name they managed to get Yuki Soma, the little winger out of Nagoya. He's one of the best young players in Japanese football, and they've got him on loan through to the end of the year, and he's made a real difference to them. I mean, the one that maybe came with the more noise was Ayase Ueda, who's been in the you know, various youth teams for Japan, but he doesn't look like he's got a great deal about him, to be honest. But this Soma, he's going to be the next of these superb Japanese youngsters to go across to Europe, and I think he's going to make a really big impact. He's a wonderful player. So yeah, so how they managed to get him on loan, I don't know, but he's going to add a real punch and creativity to them. On the run home, Serginho has been in imperious form, probably one of the top two or three players overall in the league this year. He copped a bit of a knock here. He got all taped up and mummified at the end, so hopefully he's all right to go. And I mean, you know, even so, they still managed to cover for these players. Some, you know, I mean, Nagaki is a central midfielder, spent half the season as a makeshift right a fullback. You know, before they got Koizumi in, and he's, in all honesty, probably not a natural right fullback and more of a central midfielder as well. So they're patching things up where they need to, and they just continue to get results, which for me is a real, it's a championship pedigree to be this close at this point of the season where, like I said, you just can't discount how physically draining it is, how mentally draining it is, the movement and just the fact that these players have not had any time off. It's absolutely, I think it's an amazing achievement to be where they are 4 points off the lead. And they're absolutely well in the hunt to win an unprecedented, you know, four titles in the 1 year, which would be a fantastic thing for Japanese football if they can manage a way around it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you absolutely would not put anything past them whatsoever. They are the winning machine of the J-League. There's no question about that. And I mean, yeah, looking through their starting 11 from last Friday night, I think, I can't remember if Misal started the Champions League final or not. I don't think he did he? So, from my,
no, he was injured.
Yeah, from my memory, it looks like it was only Kwon, Serginho and Choma Doi who would have started last season's Champions League final. And, okay, so they were held 2-2 on the evening, but that just shows you the depth and the quality of the squad, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah, this Shintaro Nago, the central midfielder, is also a very, very good young player as well. So they get excellent young talent by and large. They've brought, you know, someone like Koike, they brought back to Japan who's done well, and the depth options at the positions, you know, that have had to step in have done a really good job. I mean, even Choito's looked, you know, kind of passable in this team. So it's remarkable, Chicken.
All right, and you mentioned earlier you were a little bit concerned about Gumba's five straight draws, and they've slipped down the table a couple of spots. But yes, Usami and Idaguchi have ridden back into the country to apparently save the day there. But you did mention Sho Ito, Scott, so that gives us a perfect segue onto our next guest. After a quick hit of music, we'll chat about Sho Ito's former club, Yokohama F. Marinos, with Stuart Woodward. And it's a big welcome back to J-Talk 2, Stuart Woodward. Stuart, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Great to have you back on. And, I guess you're in a pretty good mood after events on Saturday night down in Nagoya. But, before that, as I said earlier with Scott, when I went away, your Yokohama side were 3 points behind FC Tokyo, our nearest challengers. But then you proceeded to lose three games on the spin. So, long story short, what went wrong?
Well, that's a good question. I had to look back again myself tonight. So the last three matches, the three losers were versus Shimizu, Kashima, and Cerezo. Mm. So the Shimizu match, that was, if I can remember back to that match was, I think it was a fairly even match. Like the Marinos got like 10 shots to Shimizu's 8, and just the one goal, we couldn't catch up with that one at all. And that was the first match where, looking back tonight, I could see that the pitch really wasn't its usual green self, and started to look like it's having some problems there. Then going on, what do we have next? Was the Kashima match? Well, I thought that was a good match, and I thought we might have won that match, but for the goals, so with the equaliser in the 68th minute, I thought by Nagagawa, I thought we really had a chance for that one. But then pretty shortly after that, Ogihara got sent off, his second foul, and then we lost a goal to Ueda in the 87th minute, so that was pretty much unrecoverable after that. But you know, again, it was especially an even match, and against Kashua away, which I can't remember the last time that we won there, but 10 shots to 10, and Marinos as usual had the possession. So I think in that match, I think there wasn't really any complaints, but just the luck wasn't with us. Then in the in-between match, we had the local derby with Yokohama FC, and that turned out to be quite a an eventful match, because our goalkeeper Park got quite badly injured in that one. He ran off to the left-hand side to make a tackle just on the sideline, and couldn't really see what happened to him, but I think he's got a very badly bruised leg, and so he was out. He's still out now, and that after Ikura left for Kobe, that left us with number three goalkeeper Sugimoto, who now takes the top position, and he's been in the team for the next two matches following that, which was Cerezo, his first J1. Performance, and then Nagoya away. But then going on to Cerezo, the pitch looked so bad in that match. Like from the very start, it looked like a farmer's field, and we really don't know what's been going on with there. Like I've been looking at lots of videos, and quite interesting videos about how these hybrid pitches work, and how the groundsmen at the Premier League and even some of the minor leagues in England, how they take care of their pitches. And I think it succumbed to the strange summer weather that we've been having recently, with the very hot weather and then the very rainy weather, and especially in the hot weather, if those pitches, I think, have to be watered three times a day, because they have such good drainage that if they don't keep them constantly wet, then the top surface can come away, and that seems to be what happened. And I really don't. I think under relaying for the Rugby World Cup, which is a little bit strange, because I thought that that was going to be the Rugby World Cup pitch in itself. But going back to the Cerezo match, again a similar situation. Early goal by Cerezo, Okuno scoring in the 12th minute. Then in the 68th minute, it looked like we were at least going to pull back a draw, and because we haven't beaten Cerezo in a very long time in all competitions. Marcos Junior got the goal in the 68th minute, but as we are wont to do, like a very quick equaliser in the 76th minute, wrapped it up for Cerezo. So, you know, the Marinos in that game, 19 shots to 10, and again, you know, as usual, playing with the ball for most of the match, 70% of the time. Again, I think there was kind of no complaints that they were playing or lack of enthusiasm, just it wasn't with us. And as you said, we were really slipping down at that point, but all of the other teams did us favours over the last couple of weeks, and the performance on Saturday was back to normal, I hope. But again, we can have some discussions about the penalties in that match, because I watch Nakagawa every match, and he falls down in the box at least once in every match. I'm not sure in the hope of getting a penalty, but certainly because of running fast and getting some kind of contact. And the referee kindly gave us two penalties in that match, and followed by three other goals. Eric, who was the quickly brought in replacement for Edgar Junior, has done fantastically well in the Nagoya match. I think he struggled to find his place a little bit in the Cerezo match, but you know, really looked very, very good. And Keita Endo scored two goals, and you know, both with Eric playing a part in the goal. So it looked, oh yes, so that was a little bit one of our struggles in the previous matches, was the lack of Edgar Junior after his injury, and it seemed like he twisted his ankle very badly, and he's back in Brazil now in having hospital treatment for that. So Marinos over the summer managed to pick up Eric and a few other players very, very quickly. So that seemed to be a saviour, really. So hopefully he'll be doing as well in the following matches to go.
All right, then, Stuart. So I was going to come on to Eric. Yes, as you say, the replacement for one of Scott's J1 boyfriends, Edgar Junio. So
we have to pro rata those goals, man, because on games played for goals scored, I think I've still won that bet. The season ending injury doesn't rule me out.
Yeah, he's still number one, isn't he? Joint number one with
the dancer.
Your man in Tokyo.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we stipulated that or not, Scott, at the start of the season. So we'll have to go back and check the videotape, I think, and might need an independent adjudicator. So Stuart, we might be calling on you again. Although no, you can't be independent. You're a Yokohama supporter. But anyway,
I'll do my best.
Yeah. So well, Scott. So what have you made of Yokohama's month then? Obviously, yeah, three odd goal losses that they will have been frustrated with, because after the loss to FC Tokyo at the end of the first half of the season, they'd strung together three straight wins, as we said, to get back within 3 points of Tokyo at the summit. So they will have been frustrated to lose those three games, as I say, all by the odd goal.
Well, without going into a lengthy a lecture on the merits of Ange and the coaching staff, you know what my answer is going to be, because I sent you the video from his pre-match little thing on the Zone of the Weekend, where I mean, which is one of the great comedic moments of Japanese television, where these interviewers who only know the same three questions to ask just ask the same question, and they still keep getting the same answer. It's like a Groundhog Day, just going back and forth and back and forth. But the thing with Ange and Pete and Arthur and the coaching staff at Yokohama is that it's not about wins or losses. It's the simple story. It's about the philosophy and the way that you play. And you can't look at it, in this month you may have lost here or you may have lost there, because the football is the epicenter of everything. And if the level and the intensity and the control of the very detailed work, and I know very well, you know, I've said it time and time again, man. These guys are amongst the elite, the absolute elite coaches in world football. I mean, they are on an extremely high level, and it's a very difficult situation for players to grasp. I mean, how long it takes to build La Sagrada Familia, that building in Barcelona, right? And you finally get it there, and still you need to put elements on top of it, and people are still working on it because it's so complex to understand. But when it all crystallizes and comes together, then wins flow as a result of the football. It shouldn't be what Tokyo and the other teams are doing, playing any kind of shitball that you need to just to try and get wins, right? Any like moron can react to anything. Ben, you and me can go and coach the way that FC Tokyo and half these clubs in the league are coaching. Anyone with half a brain can do it. It's simple to be reactive, but it's so difficult to be dominant in games. And I think even though the results haven't been coming in this thing, for me, I haven't seen much of a dip at all in the performance, which has still been, by J-League standards, and by the limitations of the squad, very high. And I think as Stuart touched on, it's been a big blow to lose Park. Again, it's a very unusual situation. Not many J1 teams will take a guy directly from a kind of paddling a J3 team and put them into their first string lineup. They've signed, in my opinion, one of the best young Japanese central midfielders in this window as well, in Kota Watanabe, who's going to be a very, very good player if he can develop the kind of play that fits Ange's football. Eric looks like the happiest man on earth. He's got the whitest teeth on earth, I'll tell you that. But you watched him in the post-match interview. I was smiling from ear to ear the whole time just listening to him. He was so happy. You know, I mean, a lot of the Brazilians are like this, but he was just at an exuberance for the game. I'm not particularly sure that he's totally going to fit into the way that Ange wants to play. But if he scores goals as he did at the weekend, it's going to be fine. But the thing is, you look at and I know a lot of players are getting headlines. Nakagawa has been a fantastic player, but I think if you look a bit deeper, the number of chances that they've actually missed, and by this I put Nakagawa as one of the main candidates. He's scored a lot and he's created a lot, but in the system and the way that Ange plays, they create a lot of chances, and there's been a lot of chances missed. So if they if they did have, or if they do get, I'm not completely convinced that they're going to remain at the club next year, which I think would be a great shame for Japanese football if they did leave Marinos, because I think they're on the verge of building something very special. But I wouldn't be surprised if perhaps a more ambitious and well-resourced J-League club were to swoop and take Ange to a rival J-League club, which could be a story to watch. But the football is just so good. It's so good because it's so difficult to do, and there's so few teams in the history of this league that have tried to play consistently in this way, where you're not worried about. I'm not saying you're not worried, but the focus is not on winning and losing. The focus is not on making the fans happy, and sometimes. I think without being too disrespectful, football for a lot of people in Japan is a form of entertainment, and it's done in a simplistic way where wins equal things are going well, and losses equal things are not going well, and it's really black and white, and you're cheering or you're booing, and the thumbs up and the thumbs down, but what these guys are doing at Marinos is. Is very complex, and it's very difficult also to understand, I think, for some football fans. But to their credit, I think most of the Marinos faithful do get what they're doing, and even they have, you know, their whatever it was, the three straight losses, but still people generally can get what's happening is that the football is of a very high level. They continually dominate teams in games, and I can't stress how hard that is to do game after game, month after month, year after year. They're imposing their will on games, which is it's never been seen before in Japan. A team that plays this way so consistently. The results are, yes, okay, they're mixed here and there, but the fact is they remain third in the league and absolutely a very good chance if they had the backing of their club. We talked about it endlessly, why they need to go on this bloody stupid trip every day on a cramped bus, which is only going to further increase the injuries. I think it's a 90-minute journey each way to get to and from this training ground down in Atami, and then the issue that Sura touched on with the pitch, which it could, those two games where the pitch has been, I think you described it as, yeah, as a paddock. That could be the difference, those dropped points, the 6 points, between winning and losing the title. It's that simple. So I'm really confused why the club would not be doing everything in its power when you're in touching distance of winning the league, and not just winning it by being a bunch of shit dogs, but by winning it by playing outstanding football. And the kind of football that will go down in history, where Japanese people remember these couple of years where the team has played in this fashion, and you could really stamp, you know, a legacy for Japanese football. But unfortunately, yeah, the club, I think in various areas hasn't backed them, which is a real shame. But even despite that, and despite the players that are missing, I still think they have the qualities and the capabilities to actually go on and win it.
Well, there you go, Stuart. I don't know. You feel like running through a wall now after hearing that? Scott's impassioned defense of Yokohama there.
Well, we're enjoying it right now. So that's what happens in at the end of the year. You know, we'll be very sad to see them go if they do in fact go. But yeah, I totally agree with what Scott said there. That as we say, like the stats on every match are good, and sometimes it's just down to like a chance, and you know, the we're really enjoying the football that we see. So, you know, I definitely would like to see them continue, and if there's any way that they could, that would be great. But yeah, it's been a really good season for us, you know, so far. And looking at the games ahead that we have, then it's kind of an interesting run into the end of the year. And the Nagoya game there was a good game for Marinos. Everything came together. Like, Nagoya didn't deserve to be beaten by five. So we, like, some of our luck that we lost in the previous matches came back. But as you've seen in the past, you know, these like victories with many goals are not uncommon in the way that they play. So if everything comes together, it could be, you know, really good run in. And I think we got the worst pick in the Emperor's Cup with Kashima away again. So you only want to go Kashima away once in a season, but drawn a second time. And the reason they got that was because the draw was fixed because Yokohama couldn't supply a stadium, so they had to take the away spot. And so that limited their choices from there was no way that Yokohama could play either of the two non-league clubs, so we were definitely going to get a more difficult draw than anybody else. So anyway, it's a kind of a sad situation, but I really hope that we can make the best of it while we have it.
Last game of the season, Ben, Yokohama hosting FC Tokyo.
Yeah, and the
one before title decider.
Let me say the one before that could be the title decider too, with Kawasaki.
It's Kawasaki, yeah.
Yeah, away. So that's a fantastic match for us. Like, it'd be very difficult for us to get a ticket to that match, because I think all of the Marinos fans will want to go to that match anyway. if it could be the decider to put Kawasaki out, or it could be the decider, you know, for Yokohama have to win that match to stay in contention. And then the very last game could be the match to win the title against FC Tokyo if the other scores go right. Or it could be the match to give the title to Kawasaki, who knows, or the title where we relinquish it to FC Tokyo. So it's the last couple of matches are very exciting prospect, you know, no matter what happens, because we might be a spoiler in either case, or we might be on a winning path.
Absolutely, and that last game of the season, Stuart, is the next one that you'll play at the Nissan Stadium. Your next two games are both at home, but yes, at Mitsuzawa, the smaller suburban ground, of course, where you took on the Yokohama FC in the Emperor's Cup recently. Draw specialists Gunma Osaka are your visitors this Saturday, the 31st, and then it's Hiroshima in a couple of weeks after the international break. So, the next two at home, and obviously with Yokohama having Mitsuzawa as a an alternative venue, I mean, you haven't had to go on that extended World Cup break that FC Tokyo have to endure. So, whether that's going to pay...
No, but Ben, it's worse. It's worse because the training facility is gone. This is the problem. So they have to go 90 minutes each way every day on a bus.
Yes, yes.
It's worse than any other club because this... I mean, it's a one-way ticket to injury. For a start, it's completely exhausting for everybody involved in it. And it's just, it's one of the great scandals of Japanese football, but that this is happening. Anyway, I've been over it a billion times, but what is this goddamn rich man's pastime doing coming and being allowed to destroy our game in Japan?
Yes, indeed. Well, yes, we certainly know your feelings on that, Scott. And yes, the Rugby World Cup. Take it or leave it. I'm not a rugby guy myself, but a big international event coming to Japan, but it is definitely going to impact.
It's played by 12 countries. Yeah. It's not a big international event. And only rich people in those countries. What are you talking about?
Okay. All right. Well, you've thrown me off a bit there. I was hoping to have Stuart leaving on a high note, Scott. Starting off with the three straight losses, but then the euphoria of a smashing five past Nagoya on the weekend. But as it is, Stuart, we'll obviously be checking in with you before the end of the season. I hope to do that if our schedules align, but as it is for now, thanks so much for your time, and good luck to F Marinos in the coming weeks.
Yes, well, thank you very much, Ben. We missed you, and I thought I was going to get away with not having to talk about those matches with your holiday break, but you caught me off guard today with calling me back in again. Anyway, but thanks very much, and thanks very much, Scott.
Same, Stuart. Enjoy football.
I will. Yeah.
All right, then. Well, thanks again to Stuart Woodward. So, Stuart's leaving on a bit of a high, as I said, after that 5-1 away win over Nagoya. Our next guest, I'm sure, will not be as chipper, as his team is on the back of five games without a win. It's Neil Debnam chatting about Kawasaki after another quick hit of music. All right, then. As I mentioned before the break, maybe not in the best of moods after Kawasaki have gone five games without a win, but it's a very big welcome back to the podcast to Neil Debnam. Neil, how are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. I was looking forward to Saturday's game, but I'm trying to forget it now, so I'm just being positive right now. I'm feeling great.
That's excellent to hear. Well, I mean, your visitors on Saturday evening, Neil, Shimizu came off the back of an 8-0 defeat at home, no less, against Sapporo the previous week. We've already talked about how Sapporo failed to kick on from that result in their home game against FC Tokyo. Well, Shimizu gave a far better account of themselves, it goes without saying, having not conceded 8 goals again.
I mean, although I think, to be honest, it doesn't matter who we play at the moment, because we're just so random. But I thought they did a bit better. But I mean, for a bit better, that sounds kind of ridiculous. Yeah, I thought they did a lot better, I suppose. But I didn't see the 8-0. But for large periods of the game, we were all over them. But I mean, that's kind of the story this year, I suppose, that we're not taking chances. And I mean, recently our defense has fallen to pieces. I mean, I was looking at the stats earlier, and I think in the first, oh God, I should have written this down. In the first 19 games of the season, we conceded 12 goals, and in the last five, we've conceded 10 goals. So, I mean, the wheels are off. I think the wheels have fallen off, and the wheels are probably on fire as well. And, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what someone's done something bad somewhere. Someone's upset some kind of deity or something, but it's, something's really not going right at the moment. And I don't know. I mean, if I rant on about this too much, but it's really weird because I mean I don't know who to blame anymore. And I'm trying to be kind of philosophical about it and say that, you know, these things happen. And of course we don't have any divine right to win every game, and that's fair enough. But it's just it's astonishing the way we've started conceding goals all the time. And it's not like we're being battered and, you know, we're sort of saving a lot of goals and only conceding a few of the shots. It's like most games, it seems to be like opposition has four shots on target, scores three. And I think on Saturday night, they had four shots on target and scored two. And the two of the other shots were in the second minute actually of the game. So it was really weird. But as soon as we scored and as soon as they got the goal back from the free kick, which is, I mean, full credit to Douglas. That was a great free kick. But, you've got to say that the Wall probably should have done something about that. And in fact, I think, I don't want to point fingers, but I think Kudamaya ducked out of the way of the ball. So, as soon as that went in, it's like, oh, I know this is going to finish. Well, I said to my wife, this will finish 2-2 because that seems to be the score of the moment. And that's before we'd even scored, gone ahead again. But, oh no, they went ahead. Sorry. Yeah, it was a bit, oh, the cat's getting involved. It was a bit of a blur, really. A blur, but strangely predictable at the same time. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, have you two noticed that we're shipping a lot of goals at the moment? Or is it just me? I mean, I know the stats are on the board, but, anyone got any ideas, Warren?
Yeah, the thing that's confused me about Kawasaki in recent times is the chopping and changing. Obviously, this run of poor form has coincided with, once again, unfortunately, he's not so young anymore, is he? Oshima is just completely made of glass because the club is such a different-looking team when he's there, you know, controlling the rhythm and tempo from central midfield. But it's very unusual to see a Frontale team just with so many changes from game to game. I'm looking back now through the thing. I don't think they've started the same 11 back-to-back all season, I'm right in saying. And it's crucial positions, and some things I don't understand why, because this Maguinho, what we saw of him in the Super Cup, I think it was at the start of the year, looked like a very good player, and he's only supported that evidence pretty much every time he's played, which unfortunately has been sparingly. The situation with Leandro Damian, who, I mean, all he does is score goals. I mean, he scores goals. I mean, he's an exceptional finisher, but for some real unknown reason, he hasn't been able to crack a start. Then he did start in this game, of course, he's come on and he scored a goal, but then you've left Kobayashi out. So I don't understand why there's a situation where the two of them can't play, well, for one. And then, I mean, what's happening with the fullback situation is a real mystery, because you've had sometimes Noborizato and Kurumaya, who for me are both left-sided players. One of them has been shuffled across to the right on occasion, or Mawatari we've seen play. We've seen Yamamura, the number 10, who's basically been pigeonholed into this makeshift role on occasion as well. So there's been such a lack of consistency between the selections, which is a very un-Frontale thing to do. And when they were having this period of success, it was built on really a sustained 11, but then also some very promising young players who have come up and contributed now have stepped into the team. But it's just such a hodgepodge of a team. I mean, some weeks Ianaga's on the right, some weeks he's in the middle. This week he's out of the bloody squad altogether. Sometimes Saito's there, sometimes Abe's here, there, and it's just, what's going on with the central midfield situation as well, with this with the traffic accident, and then the guy's Morita, and he's not coming back into the squad, and then he was playing in defence one time, and then this Shimoda's in and out. It's just, it's just a real schmozzle of team selections. And I think with that, it's a little surprise that that the consistency that we've seen from them in previous years hasn't been there. And I just wonder if there's something going on with Onyeki, and, you know, not a power struggle, but you've got so many players who come to the club expecting to be regulars. I mean, Abe comes expecting to be a regular. Iheanacho comes expecting to be a regular. Saito comes expecting to be a regular. The Brazilians, Marquinhos and Dema, they all come. And then somehow he hasn't been able to find a way to get an 11 and say, this is what we're doing. And you either like it and you play well or you don't. And he seems to be dipping players in on occasion and then and not. And yeah, and it's just a mess. It's a mess all round. And I don't know why you can't find a situation. If you've got two great finishers, one great finisher in Leandro Damian and one moderate finisher in Kobayashi, why you can't find a way to get them playing together in perhaps you know, a central striking role, why you don't look to go two up front. I don't know. I just, yeah, it's just a real mess of a situation. But having said that, obviously the talent is absolutely still there, and I think everyone is right in believing that they're absolutely completely in the title hunt. But I think that, yeah, there just needs to be a consistent approach over these the last 10 matches. And yeah, I mean, he needs to sort things out really quickly, because otherwise, yeah, you are at risk of falling apart.
Yeah. I mean, the defense is definitely the thing. Sorry, the right back spot. I mean, I totally agree with you, Marquinhos. I think every time he's played, he's done something, and maybe he's not the best defensively, but I mean, our left and right back don't really defend that much anyway most of the time, because we've got the two centre backs and the sort of the deep midfielders doing that. And I don't know, I mean, I guess for maybe 2 years, probably since he started really, Onyeki, I've been expressing my doubts, and I don't know, I can't help think he's got a problem with Brazilians. I think I've probably
heard that. The exact same thing has occurred to me, actually. Whether these players are being signed by someone at the club, or whether it's often, as it is in Japanese, it's, you know, it's an agent and an executive who's done the deals and he doesn't want them there. It's absolutely bizarre why these two players, who in their respective positions, I think, should be clear first choice, yeah, why they're not playing. And I've actually, the same thought occurred to me, whether he does have a problem with Brazilians. It sounds very odd to say, but yeah, there's clearly something going on that we don't know the answer to.
I just feel like when Onyeki took over, he had the Kazama way of playing, and he was going with that basically, but sort of tightening things up a little bit at the back. And to give him credit, he did a good job at that. And I think maybe the difference now is that we're probably attacking in the same way, like sort of having loads of the ball and getting towards the box a lot, but not really scoring that much. But in the past, that was okay because we weren't conceding much. But now, when we've got to score, you know, at least two or three to win a game, that's the real problem. And yeah, I mean, the Brazilian thing is crazy. And I mean, even if he's got a problem with the Brazilians, why is he not playing Mawatari at right back? I mean, Noborizato and Kudamaya, yeah, I agree, they're both left backs. Kudamaya's played all the way across the back now, even though he should just be at left back. And the bizarre thing is, in the past, Noborizato's filled in at right back, but still, Onyeki decides to play Noborizato at left back and put Kudamaya at right back. And it's so predictable, because Kudamaya's extremely one-footed, and you always know what he's going to do. And when he plays at left back, he shows us what he can do, finally. You know, it's been a long time since he's played there. I don't think he's as good at centre-back because, I mean, maybe his heading's not so good. But, I mean, I know I'm, you know, sort of going for the sacred cows a little bit tonight, but I think one player who's really been stinking the place up recently is Taniguchi. I think he's had an absolute nightmare a few times. One of the games I missed when I was on holiday, I was watching the highlights, and he was pretty much involved in every goal we conceded. And again, on Saturday night, I think the second Shimizu goal, it was kind of a slightly dodgy pass from him to Morita out of defence into midfield. Morita just dawdled. And then as soon as the guy comes through with the ball, Taniguchi's left for dead, doesn't even manage to make a challenge. And, I mean, of course, I'm going to say this being a super Nara fan, but
he's back in training, right, Nara?
Yeah, he's back in training, but yeah. I just can't imagine Oniki will put him in the team because I think Jesse L is probably should be in that team now, and the right centre back pairing for me is Jesse L and Nara. I mean, I'm sorry, Taniguchi. I know he's like the vice captain, but if we're picking on form recently, he shouldn't be in there. I'd probably rather have Kudamaya playing there, to be honest, at the moment. But that's kind of, and sort of sacred cow. I can't really say anything against him. It's like suggesting that Kobayashi maybe hasn't been playing very well this year, which I might also suggest. But I mean, it shows how much I know that at halftime I was talking to my Gaijin Frontale fan friend, and I said, I tell you, the substitutions are coming. Maguinho is going to go off and Mawatari is going to come on completely pointlessly. No reason to make that change. Just he can't decide. And that happened. And then I said, he'll replace Damian with Kobayashi. And I was wrong on that one and pleasingly wrong because Kobayashi's first touch was the goal. But I mean, maybe that's a Kobayashi thing recently as well, that if Kobayashi starts and he has time to think about what he's doing, he's messing it up. But because he just came on and he just hit the ball, he scored. So, I mean, there's a lot of players who aren't playing well. I think Ianaga's not in the team. And to be honest, I don't think he's deserved to be in the team this year. But then there's lots of players who are not playing well but haven't had a chance because exactly like you said, there's no continuity. No one's getting a run. And, you know, sometimes you've got to decide the team you want and play it a bit and give them a chance to gel because everything's all over the place. Three left wingers, no right wingers. Mm. I mean, three left wingers who Oniki loves all of. So, I mean, our right wing is pretty much always Saito, who should be on the left, or Abe, who should be on the left, or Ianaga, who probably should be in the middle now. And it's just like, I mean, we've got nothing on the right, it seems. And Miyoshi, yeah, we don't need him. We'll loan him out two seasons in a row. And yeah, these Oniki players who he thinks we don't need and we loan out get sold to European clubs because they can see something that Oniki can't. I mean, I'm kind of numb to it now. I think I've given up this season because every time we've got a chance, and particularly tough this weekend when it's like, oh, FC Tiger have drawn, fantastic, oh, Kashima have drawn, and then we'll draw again. I mean, we've had so many chances to pick up points and narrow the gap, and we've messed up every single one. And, you know, 10 goals in 5 games is... And one of those games was a 0-0. 10 goals conceded in 5 games, so 10 in 4. But, I mean, the 0-0 was in the middle. So, I mean, it's... I think we don't stand a chance. I think FC Tokyo, Marinos and Kashima are all going to mess up again. But there's no way we can get probably even 15 points in the last 10 games, I don't think. I think we're in such a mess. And the next game is Cerezo away, who are a super bogey team, so plenty to look forward to next weekend.
They seem to be a bogey team for everyone because they were for FC Tokyo until recently, and Stuart said they were for F Marinos as well. So, they must be really crap against the other crap team, Cerezo, because they never get anywhere. But they seem to handle at least the Kanto teams fairly well anyway. But it's been such a puzzling season, hasn't it, Neil? I mean. You kicked off the second half of the season by teaching FC Tokyo an absolute footballing lesson at Ajinomoto Stadium. You followed that up by winning 3-1 at home over, surprise packets Oita, whose pixie dust definitely seems to have run out in recent weeks. But yes, after that, I left the country, and you've gone on this ordinary run. The game in hand away at Hiroshima, where you were 3-0 down before a late fight back from through Kobayashi and Leandro got you back to 3-2, but that wasn't to be down there against Sanfrecce. Then the 0-0 against Matsumoto that you referenced. So that means that, I mean, in the second half of the season, you've played four draws, and all of them have been against teams in the bottom six currently. So, I mean, yeah, you don't need any reminding about how frustrating this has been for you, but It's just been such a strange season where you can't get going. But as Scott said, I mean, as FC Tokyo supporters, we're certainly not ruling you out of the title race. You're 8 points behind, rather, with 10 games to go. We said before, earlier on, that with 10 games to go last season, you were 6 points behind San Freche, although you did have a game in hand. So, I mean, you can't see it, and I can understand after 5 games without a win, but I don't know, maybe it takes going down to Osaka and beating one of your bogey teams this coming Saturday for something to light a fire under these players, because Scott and I both we both live in fear of a run of 7 or 8 games in a row that we know that you're capable of, even though you can't see it at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps that would be something to kick us on, kickstart us, I guess. And also, I think, our fans are generally a bit too nice, I think. I don't want us to be horrible, and I like us being nice. But, I have a little bit of a problem with us, with us playing awfully. We still sing a lot at the end because, we tried our hardest and we were rubbish. I mean, I always think that's always a bit tough for me. I'm not going to boo him. And I would never boo during the game because I just think that's pointless. The referee, of course, is an exception. He can always have a boo before or after. even when he's like at home with his family, I'll still give him a boo. but this weekend, apparently, a Frontale fan has got in trouble because he threw a cushion at the players at the end of the game. And I thought that was kind of classic. That if there was going to be a Frontale hooligan, he's the right man for the job. we don't throw bottles, we don't throw rocks or coins, we throw a cushion. I was quite pleased with that. But I mean, they've got to know that people aren't happy. I don't want to keep going on at Aniki, and I'm trying not to blame him too much, but I can't see any other reason apart from it being his fault. And it would just be a miracle if we get anything out of this season. And I think I tweeted on Saturday night after I'd been in the pub that I'm quite looking forward to Levan Cup group matches next year, because half of our squad doesn't play because he's got, well, I mean, I guess this year they're all playing, really, though. All playing because everyone can have a go at a right back apart from the right back. So, we need something to happen, but I mean, I wish I had your confidence, but I think maybe all three of us are feeling pessimistic about our chances. But you've got to say you're in pole position, and this weekend's put another team in front of us. So, I mean, 2 teams messing up, maybe it could happen. 3 teams messing up, less chance. 3 teams messing up and us not messing up. I mean, you're getting towards the big odds. I don't know. It's like people will still have confidence in us apart from us, I guess. So, but who knows who'll play? Surely he can't drop Damian. He probably will. I think, like you said, 2 up front could work, but I mean, he's tried that on occasions and it hasn't seemed to work, but I think we just need to sort that defence out. I think earlier this year, there was our keeper, Chun Song-ryong, was, I think he got, at one stage, he had the record for the best ever save percentage in the J-League, like ever or something like that. I think there was a stat that he just married the amount of, enough saves to make him the best goalkeeper statistically in the J-League. And, well, I'm pretty sure he hasn't got that stat anymore. After the last 5 games, but it's just, I'd settle for a loss if we played a bit more interestingly, but it's just, he's killed our attack, or blunted our attack. I mean, on 90 minutes, we're still playing it across the back 4, and I'm thinking, what are we doing? I mean, I know we have some kind of, ethos and footballing style and that kind of thing, but 90 minutes, we're drawing against a team that lost 8-0 the previous week, and just kick the ball forward. Just get it in the box. I mean, and we've got a tall guy on for once, so instead of the usual midgets. I don't know. I mean, who knows who'll play? I think I know what will happen. I think we'll lose. I'm doing that on a day trip as well on Sunday. So, I mean, I guess I could drown my sorrows on the train back by myself because my wife's working in Osaka the next day. It'll be a long trip back by myself. Just the welcome of my cat when I get back. So, and he'll probably be in a mood too. So.
All right. Well, we do wish you all the best for, as you say, your trip down to Osaka on Sunday when Kawasaki faces Cerezo Neil. And we hope, I don't know, maybe you've gotten a few things off your chest and, the frustrations of the past month or so. Hopefully they can be washed away with 3 points down in Osaka on the weekend. But, for now, we'll leave it there. Thank you ever so much for your time again. And, I'm sure Scott and I are certain that things are going to turn around for Kawasaki. So, hope to speak to you again in a better mood in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I hope so too. And nice to have you back. Although I've enjoyed the other shows, but I've been quite grateful you've been away and not talking about J1 recently. So thanks for that as well.
All right. Well, thanks, Neil. My thanks again to Neil Debnam. After another quick hit of music, Scott and I will be back to briefly round up the other 5 games from J1 Match Day 24. All right, thanks ever so much to both Stuart and Neil for their thoughts on Yokohama and Kawasaki. Scott, we'll round up the rest of J1 Match Day 24 very quickly. The only game left between teams in the top half of the table finished 0-0 down in Hiroshima. Sanfrecce hosted Oita. We mentioned Oita have slipped a little bit down the table while Hiroshima have moved up in the past month. But despite Hiroshima outshooting their visitors 17-3, there were no goals. So not too much to see here or to take away from this game.
Yeah, I think it was 22-3, the stat that I saw. They were certainly in command in that area, but I mean, what can you say? I mean, Hiroshima have been on a very good run of late in terms of results. I'm not particularly they're playing decent football as you would expect, but they could certainly be a nuisance over the run home. And Oita, I think, not have given up on the season, but it's quite unusual listening to their coach talking after these matches as well, where he just continually references. And after this match, he did the same. He said, you know, we're two clubs with different ambitions. Hiroshima are going for the title, and we're trying to survive against relegation. It's just a completely unusual thing to say, but he's been like this after every match. Or, you know, it's about learning for us and progressing, and that I just wonder if there's a sense that he doesn't want to get anywhere near the ACL just to have that. I mean, you know, with the squad that they've got, I mean, that could really be a disaster for them, you know, next year if they're flying all around Asia having to deal with that. So, you know, I think the sense that I get from listening to him speak is that he's happy to kind of, be settled down in mid-table, which looks like they will finish there, and that's a fantastic return to J1.
Most definitely. A team that's been making waves in similar fashion to Hiroshima in the last couple of months have been Cerezo Osaka. They've edged their way up into the top six again with a 2-0 away win over a very troubled club, Jubilo Iwata, on Saturday. Yusuke Marohashi with a brilliant free kick in the 18th minute, and then Kota Mizunuma wrapped up the points right on half-time with a goal on the counter-attack. Cerezo, I don't know, they could also play spoilers, I guess, in the last couple of months of the season, Scott. They're currently 5 points out of the automatic ACL spots, and again, whether that would be something that they would really be targeting, I'm not sure, but they've made themselves into a nuisance in the last couple of months, and they could do so down the stretch as well.
Yeah, but they're also a nuisance to have to watch because they're just, I mean, they're not very entertaining, and it's such a shame because, again, like with a coach who was more, more proactive, they could be a very, very good team because they've got very good players, but, you know, certainly some of the stories that I heard from Latina's time at Verdi is that the players were terrified of him because, I mean, he was, you know, they could only operate within a 2x2 meter area of the pitch, and if they strayed outside it, they'd be dropped and all sorts of things would go on. So there seems to be, and you can sense it from here, the players are a little bit on edge, you know. I mean, like they're playing rigid kind of football, not being unleashed the way that you would. I mean, Solskjaer has been one of the best foreigners in Japan for years. For a long time couldn't even crack the team, and now he can't crack a start. And I'm not convinced by them at all. They could, they maybe pick up wins here or there, but I just don't know if this guy is the right guy to take them forward.
No, fair enough. And as we mentioned, Cerezo are the hosts for Kawasaki on Sunday, with Neil heading down for that game. Iwata are in a lot of strife, Scott. They are 5 points behind a second from bottom Matsumoto now, after Yamaga's huge win last Friday night away at Urawa. Before we come on to that, Iwata, as you say, onto their fourth manager of the season, and looks like they're on a one-way ticket straight back down to J2, the way things stand. Although you said earlier,
I don't know about that. I also think it's a little bit strange, because some of I'm losing track of the bloody coaches, but the guy who was the assistant that took over. Was it Suzuki that took over from Nanami when he was sacked? I thought he did a really good job. The results didn't come, but you could see immediately I think it was the last time I was on the pod, actually, the week or two after he'd taken over, and they looked a very different team, playing really positively, looking to attack. I mean, a total reversal from the way that they were under Nanami. And then this other guy's had a couple of matches and not really time to do anything, although they did pick up a big win against a bunch of plumbers or whatever in one of the early rounds of the Emperor's Cup. And now they brought this guy in, very unusual story, a Spanish guy who spent his entire professional career, I believe, in Paraguay. I think he had a stint in Qatar at the kind of a renowned Aspire Academy out there. I think he some time doing some TD kind of work in Vietnam as well. But, for a guy who doesn't know really so well football in this country, well, let's say he doesn't know it at all, and to be coming and tasked with this job is going to be a very, high bar to clear. And just from the demeanour, you don't know. I mean, he was on the sideline as if he was still, in the back streets of Asuncion or somewhere, with the big dog whistles and all the aggressive kind of moves. That kind of stuff doesn't wash in Japan either, So you have to get the players on board, and you need to figure out all those little cultural quirks straight away, because you just can't come in and expect to bark and demand your way through things. I don't know if that's the right way. There weren't too many changes made. One that I thought was a positive was Masayev coming back in, and he's a very good player. Very unusual way he hadn't been used up to this point, but structurally it was essentially the same. But you saw a difference. Okay, for the first 10 or 15 minutes, they'd come out, hunting and pressing and really aggressive, the shot with vials of adrenaline. But once that wore off, the rest of the second half was not very good. And I think it was only the fact that they were playing an opponent that, takes a 2-0 lead and then puts it in the book and goes to bed. So that was probably a large reason why they did come back into it in the second half. But, you heard post-match, he was saying, this is how we're going to play, and we've got to take this 45 minutes into the next game. So I still think they have just enough. It's all going to depend on how quickly this guy can get it together, But, I mean, they have they have decent players in every, but they have a fantastic goalkeeper, and then they have decent options, in most other positions. Guys that can score goals, midfielders at Kangrat, fullbacks at Arake. So, and you look at some of the other teams that are in that muddle to avoid the drop as well. It doesn't make sense, but I can see them, maybe at least manage to get close to that playoff spot, and then see if they can't survive that way yet again.
Well, obviously they have a recent experience, i.e. last year, of the J1, J2 promotion relegation playoff, when they saw off at Tokyo Verde and retained their spot in J1. But, outside of that, it's hard to see them finishing above 16th, isn't it, Scott? Because this fella's got 10 games to turn it around, and they're 10 points behind 15th place, the Vegalta Sendai, with who are on the same amount of points as Gumba. I mean, there's a group of six or seven teams separated by only 3 points from 9th placed Nagoya down to 15th place Sendai. But from there, it's a 4-point gap to Tosu, and then, as I say, 10 all the way down to Iwata. So for them to be safe is going to take a rescue mission that, frankly, as optimistic as you can be, I just can't see that happening.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think, I agree with you. I don't think they'll push up far beyond that, but I think it's certainly attainable to get into that playoff spot. And you do that with momentum, then who knows what's happening. It's 6 points today, you know, and then you don't know. It's four. I mean, you know, Segalta, there you go. put that in your highlights. Vegalta haven't been particularly impressive of late. Like I said, if Gamba keep drawing every game until the Olympics, then, you know, they're going to find themselves falling down as well. And who knows what's happening with Shimizu. And it's not even beyond the pale that Reds could get dragged into it with the ACL distractions and Shonan, you know, with what's going on with Cho and all this. We don't know. So I still think there's enough uncertainty to think if, you know, they can ping, you know, a couple of wins together. You know, and then this guy's on board with the players, and you just don't know what's going to happen. At least, you know, at least, like I said at the start, you've got to commend them in a way after doing nothing to drive them into this situation at the start. At least they're panicking and trying to get their way out of it, you know, unlike a club that's just got relegation written all over them in Matsumoto.
All right. Well, yeah, well, I was going to say that Sagan have shown Iwate how to do it, because when I left for Australia, they were rock bottom, but yeah, they won two in a row as well as a draw in those three match days. And despite a thumping on a Friday night that we're going to come on to, they currently sit in that promotion relegation spot in 16th. All right. Well, yeah, we're going to come on to the other two occupants of the bottom three in a minute after a very, very brief mention of Sendai 1, Shonan 1 up at the Yurtec on Saturday. Ryohei Michibuchi gave hosts Vegalta a 68th-minute lead, but a 25-yard blast from Daiki Kaneko with 14 minutes left earned Shonan a share of the spoils, and they moved up to 10th above Urawa, who lost 2-1 at home to Matsumoto on Friday night. Yamaga, well, they might be on a one-way ticket to J2, Scott, but if they can put a few more passionate performances like they did on Friday together.
Oh, come on. This is what you were saying at the start of the season. I told you it's crap. Right? They are a dreadful team. They're a dreadful team. They're dreadfully coached. I don't know what on earth is this craze in Japanese football of these guys that want to pretend like they're intellectual managers. They've got the board out with little magnets and bloody go out and coach, man. You're not. This is what you do after the game. You don't sit there on the sideline with these things. And, man, this guy is an imposter, this Sorimachi. I don't buy it at all, right? He's sold his two best players. You already touched on Maeda and the other guy, Leandro Pereira, who goes to Hiroshima. And surprise, surprise, just what do? He just scores goals and looks like an excellent player. And they bring in this bloody donkey from Yamagata in J2. They're a dreadful team. They're absolutely dreadful. And this is what you're saying. I've had a go at the start of the season. You can't be happy coming and eking out points and taking a brave and battling draw. It's not the way to survive. The way to survive is to play football and don't react and do what an Oita did, right? And say, you know, we're going to come up. The Oita squad is no better or worse than the Matsumoto squad. But what is the difference? It's a completely different ideology and a mentality. One team is playing to win and to succeed, and the others are playing simply not to lose games. And they were, Urawa, one of the worst teams in the league at the moment, by the way, and Matsumoto were dreadful against them. It was somehow a miracle that they escaped. They had like two shots and they scored two goals and they win. Okay, maybe once in a blue moon you're going to get these kind of results against equally poor teams, and Reds rotated half their squad before the ACL as well, which played into their hands. But they are an absolutely dreadful team, and J1 will be much better off without them anywhere near. I'm not saying that obviously the fans are great and the whole story is great, but this Sorimachi, man, he's got to go, right? He absolutely has to go and never be near Japanese football ever again, because this is, it's just not the way to, but the guy's a dinosaur. This is how you played, you know, at the dawn of the J-League 25 years ago. It just doesn't work in 2019, man. It's not how teams play. And put your bloody whiteboard down with your little silly magnets on it and just get out there and coach properly, right? I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. And so bad is the squad that they're going to struggle mightily, I think, in J2 next year, unless they get a progressive coach in who can, you know, really turn things around.
Well, okay, so the squad is so bad, meaning the quality of the players, or just simply the way that they're managed?
Both. The prime, because Oita have shown that you can have a modest squad and still succeed. The Matsumoto squad is bad, and it beggars belief why they sold not just one, but their two. Outside of the keeper, who's a half decent player, but and yeah, your boy with the nice hair, who's just come back from injury. But it's a dreadful squad. But you had two great players in key positions that could score the goals that could keep you up. Maeda why are you only loaning him? What are you loaning him for? You're going to have him playing in J3 in 2 years from now? I mean, what on earth is that about? Just either sell him, get money now to get a reinforcement that you need to stay up. Why on earth would you loan one of your best players? He's not coming back and playing for you in J3 in 2021, right? So just sell him and get money now to reinforce his squad. And then you've got this Leandro Pereira, who looks like a great player for some reason. Sorry, Machi didn't particularly like him or never playing him. And he goes to Rosham and he looks like exactly the great player that he is. So what on earth is going on with this club? I don't know. And the way that they played right since they come back, they've been happy to take battling brave draws. Well, it's 2019. Take your battling and brave draws and shove it, mate, because it's not the way to play.
Well, I know, but I mean, not every team, and I mean, Oiter are not a good, you know, comparison for me to make here, because obviously they have, I think they've outpunched, you know, their potential, but then that's to their credit. But I mean, not every team, you know, can push up for the ACL spots. And I mean, you must have been pessimistic about them at the start of the season. So, I mean, yeah, not every team can finish in the top four. There are always going to be, you know, ordinary teams, and there are always going to be teams, the battling teams that come up in J2. And
yeah, but that doesn't mean you need to play or like an ordinary battler. That's my point. I'm not talking about wins or losses or anything. I'm talking about the methodology and the ideology and the identity of the club, which is a concept that should last for a long time. What this guy is doing is, I mean, it's like, you know, you have the image of Tosu, right? And you can't ever get it out of your head because Ficadenti was there and stuff, like, and it's just, you could have a great coach who comes in, but it just takes such a long time to wash that smell and that stench away. And what this guy is doing is putting that stench and just caking this club who has great supporters and a great stadium, and he's caking them in mediocrity.
But he's also taken them up to J1. He's also given them, you know, some of the best times of their football supporting lives because, you know...
They're rubbish.
I know, but not every team can be that high school team that you love to watch that never, you know...
Yes, they can. Why they can't be? Of course they can. They absolutely can, but they choose to appoint these bespectacled librarians.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, we both want to get to bed. So, I mean, this is, you know, I accept that they're a very ordinary team. And, yeah, perhaps they are doomed. But, you know, performances like this where they don't perform well, they can eke out a win. Well, you know, any pain that Urawa suffer is all right by me. And that saw them slip down to 11th, and they're going nowhere. But, of course, they're still in the ACL. So we'll, you know...
They'll probably win it.
Yeah, wouldn't put it past it. But all right, we'll move on to the other game, the last game of the round. It was the zone jerk fest from last Friday night. It was the farewell match for Fernando Torres, and yeah, it probably couldn't have come soon enough because Torres is very much finished, and that was definitely on display last Friday night at the real estate agent in front of the train station stadium. Tosu lost 6-1 to Vissel Kobe, a brace for Hotaru Yamaguchi, who started the scoring and finished it in the 86th minute, a brace for Kyogo Furuhashi, who hopefully for Kobe fans will be staying until the end of the season, with the rumours still swirling around. He might be off before the European transfer window closes in the first week of September. A penalty from Andres Iniesta and a bullet from the rejuvenated Junior Tanaka saw off poor old Tosu, who only had Takashi Kanai's header in the 79th minute to show for what they hoped was going to be a glittering occasion, as it was. At Kobe absolutely put them to the sword, Scott, and I guess they made it into quite an occasion, but Kobe absolutely stormed to this win, and a much changed Kobe, it must be said. If we were going to do winners and losers from the J-League transfer window, hopefully they won't be losing Furuhashi, but even if they do, they've done a tremendous amount of work, you'd have to say, Kobe, in especially in strengthening their defence.
Well,
in terms of name signings, in terms of getting Gotaku Sakai back from Germany, and once well-regarded centre-back Thomas Vermaelen into the club as well.
Yeah, I think the key has been Sakai. He's been excellent in these couple of games. He's been absolutely excellent. And Vermaelen's come in and helped a little bit in terms of the organisation. But, I just still can't buy that just continually throwing money at... Sakai's a different case. I mean, he's a returning locally. He's not that old, but at these aging players. There's been some kind of rift going on with something, you know, with Podolski and people saying he shouldn't have had his treatment in Germany. He's back now, so we don't know how close he is to a return. The exception to this has been Iniesta, but the concern that I have with Kobe, it's lessened now that the worst part of the summer is over, but you saw... I mean, essentially, Kobe were playing with nine players for the start and through the summer before the injury to Vija. Because both him and Iniesta, and Iniesta has been a fantastic addition to the league in terms of his creativity on the ball. But particularly for the style that we understand that Kobe wants to play, which is a, you know, all action, up-tempo, dynamic kind of football, it requires players to be very good off the ball in terms of you know, harassing and closing opposition teams down. And what you've seen is by signing 38-year-old players, to the surprise of absolutely nobody, is that they can't do that in the heat and humidity of the Japanese summer. And it was such a shame to see. It was one of the games a month or so ago, and a cross has come in from the right. Iniesta, instead of going up and closing the player down, he stood back, he's watched, he's waited for the cross, and then he's lazily just stuck an aimless leg out. I mean, this is one of the greatest players of all time, and he's been reduced to doing this, right? Because you simply can't operate at that age in the conditions that you're playing in Japan. So I don't ever buy that, you know, a team of 35-plus-year-olds is ever going to be successful in Japan because of the particular climatic conditions. It'll work well at the start of the year, and it'll work well at the end of the year. But, you know, that major chunk of the season, because we play through, you know, the heat of the summer here, it just it catches anybody out in that situation. And when you've got a team that's populated by those kind of players, I think it's no surprise that this was when Kobe really started to struggle, because they were literally playing two players down off the ball, and teams were having you know, less trouble than they should have in finding a way to play through them. So again, I don't know if signing a veteran a central defender is necessarily the right situation either. And they've got now so many players that someone has to miss out, and someone like Wellington, who missed out here, has arguably, outside of Iniesta, been their best player. So it's just a mess. How many bloody foreigners are there? Like eight. They bought this guy from Tulsa, the Lebanese defender, Omar, he can't even get a run. So it's just ridiculous. And it just, yeah, I mean, it just reeks of just throwing cash like all around the room. You know, you're walking into a bar full of strippers and you don't know which one, you're just throwing money everywhere and trying to find the best looking one. I don't know. It's just ridiculous what's going on. It's absolutely no way to build a club, no way to build an identity. And I think it's been proven that it doesn't work in Japan. Do what the other clubs have done. Get your own scouting mechanisms and go find players. Look what Marinos, I know they've got the advantage of being able to tap into the, you know, the database of City and so on. And the players that they brought in have been excellent. You know, the defender, Thiago Erigo, has been a great player. Marcus Junior is an absolute revelation of a player. He's a superb player. And now they've brought this Eric. So that's four foreigners that they've hit on, each and every one of them. And that doesn't happen by luck or good fortune. And it certainly didn't happen because they just went out and threw cash at some named veteran as a vanity project for a rich owner. So I think Sakai is the only one that I agree that has the potential to change things, but they're going nowhere. They're absolutely going nowhere. And this model is never, I don't think, never going to bring success to Kobe.
Yeah, it was a win that saw them move three spots up in the table, but still only up to 12th in the middle of that logjam of teams that I mentioned before, in between Nagoya in 9th and Sendai down in 15th. So, yeah, for those of you keeping track at home, the five foreigners that Vissel put out on Friday night were Dankler and Vermaelen in defence, Samper and Iniesta in midfield, and Vija on the bench. He came on with just over 10 minutes to go and actually set up the last goal for Hotaru Yamaguchi, or played a part in the last goal, yeah.
So that means, so you've got Podolski, Almaty, and Wellington. So
and they'd sold the South Korean goalkeeper back to the K-League already. So, yeah, that was
This is just ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Mr. Mikitani with the deepest pockets in Japan, so I guess we shouldn't be too surprised. And yeah, Iniesta did have a very eventful evening, didn't he? He scored the penalty in the 20th minute. He played a 50-yard volleyed pass into the path of Furuhashi, who set up Tanaka 2 minutes later for his goal, and then, went off just before halftime with a hamstring injury. So he wasn't able to play his full part in the ceremonial proceedings with Fernando Torres at the end of the game. There was a terrific tweet at the end of all of those proceedings where the final score of this game was actually 6-4 with Torres and two of his kids popping the ball into the net in front of the Tosu fans after the post-game ceremony. So, yes, he actually did kick the ball into the net. Yeah, there is video proof of that.
Oh, I love this.
He had numerous chances in the game itself, but yeah, it was, as you said, in the green room, Scott was hitting Rose Ed on a regular occasion, so it just wasn't.
Ben, he has scored 2 goals in 20 appearances this year, and I believe it was very similar numbers last year.
It was within 3 minutes of each other, wasn't it?
I think there's a very good case to be made that he is the worst foreign signing in the history of the J-League. It's truly astonishing to say it, but it was as if he had some magical power of cape or something, and he's took it off and he's gone back to playing park football like you and me. I mean, He's been dreadful. There's no other way. He's been woeful. You wouldn't pick him for a JFL team. I mean, he's astonishingly bad. He's dreadful. He's woeful. And because there's been this need through DAZN, and I've said before, this complicated web of agents that were employed by DAZN in the J-League to recommend players, and they recommended this guy, and no one's obviously done any kind of research what's going on and why you're putting a guy like this in the middle of country Japan and all these other elements that are up to it. But I think in a large part, the reason why Tosu is where they are now is because of this guy. It's just a little, it's a little cringeworthy, the whole thing, DAZN doing all these, multi-part documentaries. I mean, it's like people can see. We're not fools, man. We can see what's going on. You don't need to overhype it because you just make yourself look silly. I mean, the guy is, he just can't play football. So, the whole hoopla around it was just, it's just over the top, And again, the same situation with the Corbett situation just speaks to dreadful recruitment and name recruitment, which has never, since maybe the first year or two of the J-League, it's never been the way to go. And I don't think, it's the way to build successful clubs. And you look at the teams that are consistently at the top of the league and those that are, this year are ones with, you can say, no name foreigners. I mean, Tokyo has only got basically one, right, for a start in Diego. Well, he's not going to be Japanese as well, isn't he, in a couple of years, right? So they've got no foreigners. And Kashima, the ones that they've got have been excellent. And again, they've come in unheralded. This Serginho has been a brilliant player. I went through the Marinos guys. Kawasaki did spend the cash on Damian, but then decided not to play him. Hiroshima have done well with their guys. This Heiner back in his second stint looks like a very good player as the right wing back. Then they've gone and got this Leandro Pereira. So you go down the teams, Chanatip coming from Sapporo. So the way is not to spend all these wads of cash on aging names at the end of their career. But I think unfortunately with DAZN being desperate for names, I can see it continuing.
Yes, indeed. And, you wonder if, there'll be a weight lifted off the shoulders of everyone at the real estate agent in front of the train station stadium. They're at home again. This is coming Saturday night, Tosu. They entertain Sendai. So, Yohei Toyota, Mu Kanazaki and Yuji Ono can get to work without the spectre of a Torres looming over them. We shall see. Kobe, for their part, they're at home against Sapporo, who have, of course, scored 8 in their last away game, with the Kobe having just netted 6 against Saga, and that could be anything at the Noivir Stadium. And the rest of the games are played over the full course of the weekend. The match day 25 slate gets started on Friday night with Nagoya hosting FC Tokyo, and there are 3 games then on Sunday, including the one that Neil will be at Cerezo Osaka. So plenty of J-League action to come over the coming weekend, and we hope you've enjoyed our very lengthy recap of what's gone on in the past month. Scott, I couldn't have done it without you. Always appreciate your passionate opinions and, yeah, love having a chat with you. So thank you ever so much for your time again. And, yeah, look forward to catch up with you again soon.
No worries. Don't send the tape to Matsumoto.
No, I shall not. And before we go, I should say a big shout out to Sam Robson, who was scheduled to join us tonight, but succumbed to an injury in the warm up and had to be a late withdrawal from the match day squad. So look forward to catching up with you again soon as well. So for now, that is it for this week's episode of the J Talk podcast. Great to be back with you. My thanks again to Scott McIntyre, Stuart Woodward, and Neil Debnam, and of course to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back to wrap up the full Matchday 25 slate in next week's episode. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.